KJZZ's original production, The Show, is supported by Banner Health, Arizona's largest nonprofit healthcare system. Last year, Banner reinvested more than $1.1 billion in community health and charity care. Banner Health, nonprofit for Arizona. BannerHealth.com/nonprofit4AZ.
Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
They created this crooked fund to reward criminals who assaulted cops. I'm the son of two police officers. I find this a disgrace.
This addresses advertising to children in a lot of the ways that, same ways that alcohol and tobacco, and not allowing the actual devices to have cartoon characters or be a game or something like that.
She should be tired of spending taxpayer money on frivolous lawfare-type court actions.
I want to thank them for coming in and blocking this bill, even though we watered it down so much that it's doing one key thing related to protecting perfectly good historic homes.
Insurers would point to multi-plan. Multi-plan would point to insurers. And in a coordinated effort, they would pressure providers, doctors, nurses, and hospitals into accepting that low offer.
It's just that last 1% is often the hardest because it's the areas where you haven't been able to reach consensus yet.
And joining me to talk about a restart in the case of the so-called fake electors, the feds saying they'll appeal a ruling on getting Arizona's voter rolls and more, are Marcus Delartino of First Strategic. Marcus,
good morning.
And Matt Grodsky of Matter of State Strategies. Matt, good morning to you.
Morning.
So, Matt, let me start with you. With Attorney General Chris Mays says she is going to take the fake electors case, so-called fake electors case, back to the grand jury. The state Supreme Court declined to hear a review of lower court rulings, which said that the case could not move forward because the grand jury did not get certain information. Is there any part of you that's surprised that she's continuing on with this case?
Not at all. I mean, I think it's important to set the right precedent here. This is about protecting the next election as much as it is about making sure that there's justice for the past one. If we set a precedent where you can essentially just be a fake elector and there's no consequences, that's incredibly dangerous for this republic. So I commend her for doing that. And I think that Arizonans, by and large, understand that what happened with the fake electors was wrong and that wasn't okay to do. So I think it's right that she's pursuing it. And we'll see. We'll see if there's a different outcome with, potentially a different judge and different evidence that's presented.
Well, I mean, Marcus, there also might be a different attorney general by the time this case gets anywhere, right? Given, you know, just in terms of logistics, in terms of how quickly the courts move, there is, of course, an election coming up in November. And, you know,
what?
If you might have heard about this.
That's crazy.
That's
I know. We'll get to that. But, you know, obviously, if Mays wins re-election, presumably she would continue this. But if not, the Republicans who would take over, both of them have said this is over.
Yeah, I don't – that's no surprise, I don't think. And, you know, to your point, there's going to be a lot of time. The wheels of justice turn slowly, I think somebody once said. And so I don't think there'll be any surprises there. There's so much time that's gone by between the first case and now, you know, today, that I think a lot of people sort of assumed that this had gone away and it was a done deal. And so, you know, I was a little surprised, to be honest with you. I think I was probably one of those that said the show was over.
Thought maybe she would just drop it and say, okay, I tried. Let's move on.
I also think that, you know, Democrats obviously see an opportunity. I mean, you know, I think that they are looking at Trump's numbers and feeling a little full and decided to go for the gusto.
I mean, Matt, do you think – obviously we don't want to suggest anybody is thinking anything that maybe they're not thinking, but – is there a political implication to this? Like, does this, especially since it will most likely still be going or starting when the election is happening, does this become an issue?
Yeah, I think the political thing to consider is as we get closer to this election you speak of in November, I think the administration is going to likely pull more shenanigans, right, and try to do what they can to influence the outcome either before or after, right? I mean, he's signaled as much. So I think the fake electors case probably becomes more of a reminder or a subject that comes up in those conversations as we get closer. So I think it's politically advantageous from that perspective.
So, Marcus, speaking of this election that apparently we all just found out about that's coming up in November, the U.S. Justice Department has said that it is going to appeal a ruling from a federal judge here in Arizona that said the Justice Department is not entitled to Arizona's voter rolls. This is something that Adrian Fontes had fought. Fontes, Matt, we should point out that you have worked and continue to work for him.
Yep.
The judge in this case was pretty clear that she didn't think DOJ had much of a leg to stand on.
Yeah, and just to point out, Matt works for him in a campaign capacity, not in the official Secretary of State.
Yeah,
he's not
God.
A government employee.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there should be any surprises here. I certainly wasn't surprised. I mean, this is sort of classic DOJ, classic federal government is appeal as long as you can until you get the ruling that you want. And so I certainly wasn't shocked. I was, you know, a little surprised that the U.S. Postal Service is starting to make rules based on a decision that hasn't been finalized. All of this just adds a lot of chaos to the vote by mail system. And, you know, I recognize I am in the minority on this issue, but I love vote by mail.
That's in the minority.
I think you've got a lot of fans with you.
For a Republican. Just to point out, I'm the Republican.
Okay.
And I will tell you, it has been worked to the advantage of Republicans ever since it was invented, largely because of the Forbes campaign, if you remember that guy who ran for president.
Steve Forbes, yeah.
It's been a tool that Republicans have done very well with. And so, I understand the push. But like even Turning Point has said, like if you look at that latest SRP election, it was all about getting these ballots back. So I think even Turning Point in Arizona has realized, look, we have to be better on how we use the system. I just don't think nationally that message is sent in. And, you know, I have a tendency to spend a little bit of time in some assisted living centers with some older folks. And I'm going to tell you that is probably a 95% Republican base. And if those folks aren't voting, I am a tad bit curious about – I think it will not have a net poor effect on the Republican turnout.
Hmm. So, Matt, with the caveat that none of the three of us are lawyers in this room, given what Judge Susan Brnovich wrote in her initial ruling against the DOJ, any reason to think that DOJ will be more successful with another judge?
No, and I think that's why the Secretary said this was a futile effort. Look, that is a Trump-appointed judge that this was not a legal term, but she essentially laughed away the DOJ's position on this, right? So sure, to Marcus's point, they can keep appealing it, right? The Secretary's going to keep fighting. And I'll just add, look, Republicans are the ones that in the 90s essentially invented vote by mail. It's been to their collective benefit for years. You know, north of 80% of Arizonans enjoy that. And we saw the ramifications of people not voting by mail in the 2022 election when Trump told a bunch of people to stay home. And that didn't work out so well for his party. So they can take that stance, but I don't think it's going to work out super well for them.
Okay, so Marcus, you mentioned the USPS rules. This is they submitted or released sort of initial rules in response to an executive order that the president issued a little while back. And one of the big issues in this rules, one of the big provisions, is that states would have to, and I'm going to paraphrase here, states would have to basically submit to the federal government a list of everybody who will be getting a mail ballot. There are rules about the barcodes that have to be on the envelopes, both the ones that go to the voters and the ones that voters return. And perhaps understandably or predictably, a lot of county election officials are saying, wait a minute, like I'm not sure we can actually pull this off before the November election.
Yeah, I am absolutely confident they can't. And I say that, of course, being conservative and seeing how government sort of the wheels work, and wheels do not work quickly or efficiently. I will just tell you that. And so you're adding another layer of bureaucracy on your vote by mail system, right? I mean, look, the cleanest way to do it would have the county recorders send that information if that's what you wanted to do. I don't believe that makes the system any more efficient. I will tell you that. But that would be the best course of action. Putting the U.S. Postal Service in the middle of this, for God's sakes, who's broke and been broke for I don't even know how long, is like a terrible idea.
I mean, Matt, does this potentially impact, the, especially in a place like Arizona, where the vast majority of voters vote early and vote, a lot of them vote by mail. Some put their ballots in a drop box or bring it to an election office. But a lot of folks use the mail. What kind of impact might this have on turnout and who turns out?
No, I think it would decimate turnout. And Marcus brought up the point of elderly folks, stuff like that. I think it would be catastrophic electorally. And it's not popular, which is why it just astounds me that they continue to push and push and push on this particular issue. So I don't think it's going anywhere. I don't think that you can actually, you know, execute something like this given the timeline we have. And then at the end of the day, you know, I think if we still believe in the Constitution is very clear that it's up to the states to run their elections, right? It's not up to the federal government. And I think there's a lot of Arizonans that still appreciate that and don't want their federal government meddling in this system.
And Marcus, we should mention there are some lawsuits challenging this. We'll get the rulings on those shortly, but go ahead.
I was just going to say this as, you know, sort of a side note, but if you go back and look at the SRP election, there was numerous complaints about, one, how fast people got their ballots through the USPS system and how long it took that ballot to get back once they put it in the mailbox. Mm. And that election is a microcosm of a statewide election.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
those
ballots are absolutely nothing compared to what is going through the mail system when we hit October. So I'd really like a lot more work done on the front end before we throw this idea into practice.
Marcus, do you agree with Matt that if these rules were to go into effect as released, it would really lower turnout?
I do. Yeah. Most people, and look, we're election geeks and we do this all the time. We're all set up to vote like however humanly possible we're going to get our ballots in. Joe Arizona is not going to – he was working his butt off to cover his gas bill and his, you know, butcher bill.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first thing on his mind. And I probably spend, 90% of my time once we get into October taking phone calls from what I affectionately call my civilian friends, walking them through how to vote, whether it's finding a polling place for them, while it's finding out if they were actually registered to vote, which is always my favorite, or how to get their mail-in ballot. So, I think we overestimate the details that most citizens understand about the voting process.
Agreed.
Interesting. All right. Marcus, some more drama between the Maricopa County Recorder, Justin Heap, and the Board of Supervisors. The Recorder is asking a judge to hold the supervisors in contempt and fine them $100,000 per day. He says they are not complying with a recent court ruling. We'll mention that you have represented the Board of Supervisors. You have some affiliation there. Again, we're not lawyers, but like what is actually going on here?
Oh, my. Well, a lot of personality, a lot of drama, a lot of fighting, and it's all going to end up in a courtroom, unfortunately. And that means the taxpayers are picking up the bill. And at the same time, Recorder Heat, in addition to fighting with the board's also fighting, I think, with the attorney general's office. Matt might know more about that. But all this, the sad part about this is it all results in taxpayer funding being used to settle lawsuits. And, I just never think that that's the best way to go about spending taxpayer dollars.
Well, so, Matt, this is, as I mentioned, based on the Recorder Heap's assertion that the supervisors are not doing what a court said they had to do in terms of giving him some of the recorders, the election duties back and some IT staff, things mm-hmm. like that. I mean, Marcus is probably right that this is just more time for the lawyers in the courtroom.
Oh, he's absolutely right. And look, the board is, my understanding is, they're appealing that previous ruling. I think it feels very much like a stunt to try to hold them in contempt at taxpayer expense. Look, I've said this over and over again. Elections have consequences, right? It was very clear the type of recorder that he was going to be in 2024. He won. I think he's operated the way we expected, which is relatively incompetent from my perspective. So I would continue to see – I'm assuming we'll continue to see fights like this, running up the bill. And it's just unfortunate because this is not how it should operate. And I think most people understand that the board – is trying to keep an erratic actor in check. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, go ahead, Marcus.
I just clarify, here's what's going on is that the duties of the elections is sort of bifurcated right now in between the board and the recorder on election day and vote by mail.
Mm-hmm.
And
or early voting.
And early voting. And so what Recorder Heap would like to do is sort of concentrate all the elections duties into his office. And what the Board of Supervisors would like to do is be able to retain the responsibilities that they've had the last couple cycles, at least, in how they operate. And so that is at the heart of the argument.
I mean, we have a primary coming up in a little more than a month, and some of these issues are still not adjudicated yet. Like, what does that do?
I mean, everyone's going to have to follow the law, right? But I think going back to the previous point, it's ultimately a checks and balance issue, right? And I think most Arizonans and people in Maricopa County respect the notion of checks and balances. So we'll see what happens in the primary. Hopefully everybody gets along, but unfortunately the tab's going to keep running.
Is there going to be a big scramble in the weeks leading up to ballots going out and election day for the primary, given that we still don't necessarily know who's doing what?
Ordinarily, I'd say I don't think so, but I would say I hope not. I hope that we run a smooth and efficient and fair system like we always have. And if there is chaos, Katie, bar the door. I mean, the electorate, we are underestimating how much anxiety is out there in the electorate. I heard this phrase a couple – not all that long ago. You know, there's a match that's close to the Tinder box. And, I think that's a little bit of where we are right now.
Interesting. All right, Marcus, let me stick with you. One of the things that the legislature has to do, the one thing that they are constitutionally obligated to do, is approve a budget. And the fiscal year will be ending at the end of this month. We going to have one?
We're getting there. The rumor has it as of – I don't think I'll get in trouble for saying this, but I think we're going next week. So Tuesday, I think you'll see an appropriations agenda come out. Here's your true tail sign if you really want to know. Is Mr. Livingston coming back?
David Livingston, the appropriations chair.
He goes away for the summertime and has said, I'll come back for the budget. My understanding is he's coming back, which would be a pretty good sign. We're ready to go. Now, does that mean there's a deal, 100% deal? I don't know that. I knew at last check we were 95% of there. What's happened is we've obviously got a revenue gap that, you know, we had about, let's just say $400 million we had to go find. There was 100 sort of ideas that were floated. At the end of the day, what's happened is the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, who's sort of the budget guys for the legislature, has said, hey, her revenue projections look a little bit rosier than we thought. And so that's going to be used to sort of close this gap.
Matt, we heard from Senate President Warren Peterson at the top of the newscap saying we're like the last 1% is often the hardest because you work through all the stuff that you can work through and then you're like you leave the stickiest stuff till the end. Do you get the sense that we're close to resolving some of that last 1 or 2%?
Yeah, I think if you cut through the noise, I think we're close. You know, he said 95. I heard 97. You know, we're in the 90s, right? And I think you're right that last few percentage points are always the toughest, but. I think folks are working at it. They want to be done. You know, they want to go get back to their collective campaigns and don't want to be sitting here in June. So I think that there's the effort in that regard to move forward.
Just a reminder, we moved up the primaries to July.
Right.
So, you know, you might want to get out of session sooner rather than later. And also, if history is any barometer here, we'll start the budget. We'll get the process going. We're going to have a little blow up in the middle of it. And then that'll get resolved and we'll be done.
Well, so I was going to ask if obviously, you know, leadership is negotiating with the governor and the governor's staff. Do you feel like this is going to be the kind of year where the rank and file are like, no?
I don't think they're ready for no, but I think they're ready for I'm not really happy. You know, I think neither side will get exactly what they wanted. But keep in mind, look, revenue numbers were – I know I just told you they were up, but they're not significantly up.
They're pretty far down in April.
Right. Exactly. So it was enough to bridge this little hole that they've got. But look, we're not building new roads in Snowflake with this rosy budget. So, you know, a lot of these people, they're not going to get exactly what they want. And so – but that's usually the sign of a decent budget.
That's how it's supposed to work. Neither side is supposed to be 100% happy at the end of the day. That's the art of compromise and working together. So if that's where we net out, I think that's a positive.
Okay. So what do you think, Matt? What do you think Democrats will have to give up to reach this compromise?
It's hard for me to speculate on what they'll have to give up. I mean, that's why I think it's so important and why they're focused on flipping the legislature this November so that they don't have to worry so much about what they have to give up going forward. But I think they're going to take their cues from the governor's office. I think they're driving the bus on this one, and I don't think anyone wants to throw a wrench in that effort from the Democrats' perspective.
Marcus, any prediction on what the Republicans will have to give up?
I would say, here's just to throw this in, I think the Democrats probably give up any hope of any ESA reform is my guess, flat out guess. But the Democrats do get significant reform on data center tax incentives.
Okay. How about Prop 123?
Ooh.
I don't think the Republicans are going to give them anything that looks like a win on 123.
Yeah. I think that they've been – that. I think everybody sort of – well, the governor's office has certainly seen that. That would be a nice add-on, but not our primary focus right now. We got to get this budget done.
And once the budget's done, obviously, they can stay in session for however long they want. They have to get the budget done by the end of the fiscal year. In previous years, we have seen traditionally they pass the budget and – you know, it's maybe another week or so until the session adjourns. There's still a decent amount of business that they have to do, including figuring out what ballot referrals they're going to send to the voters this fall.
That's probably the biggest part. As far as like the mechanics of it, most of the bills that are going to go have been put in a place at the final read section and they're ready. The next motion, the next part of business would be going to the governor's office. I think you could take care of that in about if you really worked a day.
Okay.
Maybe two. But the tough part is the ballot referrals, and I will tell you that the question right there is how long does your ballot want to be? I mean, if you wanted to, you could make your ballot 5 pages long.
Right.
But I don't think anybody really wants to go through that exercise. So I think you have room for maybe 3 or 4 more to go on there, but not much past that.
In addition to the ones that they sent last year.
Yeah, and I would say it comes back to the convenience argument that we talked about before, right? You know, people doing extra work if you get rid of vote by mail, people having to do extra work and research if your ballot's really long. So I think that's something they're weighing as they consider what to refer.
All right, we'll see what happens. Matt Grodsky, Marcus Tellertino, thanks to you both. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.